tying up some loose ends from the Easter time. As you recall, we're now just continuing the message. Christ has resurrected. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, inviting you to this episode 408 of The Next Step.
Hi, this is Susie from epostle.net, welcoming you, our worldwide community, to a new episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
So good to have you with us, Christos Hariavi Merelots. That is the official, yes, greeting that we give one another, at least official for the next 40 days. I don't know why they don't make it official like all year round. But anyway, it is the official greeting that Christ has resurrected. And of course, we are just a few days off of Easter. I hope it was a beautiful Easter for all of you. It certainly was for us. I'm going to be sharing some ideas of ideas that were developed during the Easter week. As you remember last week, I greeted you right in between that Holy Thursday list of events, including the Divine Liturgy and then the feet washing. Well, something really exciting happened that day. I mean, a miracle for me. I'm going to share that with you coming up in a few minutes. Right after that, of course, we had all the other services. We're going to kind of like recap Easter week, getting to our Divine Liturgy on Easter Sunday, which was in English, and it happens to be now officially up on YouTube. So here's how it works. We use Periscope, the first time that we use Periscope for broadcasting. We've been using all kinds of things to broadcast, including back in the year 2000, where we did an audio broadcast of the Easter service. This was the first time that we used Periscope, and I got to tell you that quality-wise now leaves a lot to be desired. But efficiency, means of production, wow, it was fantastic. So anyway, we've got some information about that, including the English service that we did, English language Divine Liturgy of the Ancient Armenian Church. Wow, what else can you want, right? And a miracle coming up, and we even took a little quick jog up to San Francisco. Had to attend, unfortunately, a funeral the day after Easter. And, you know, we have a beautiful word in Armenian. It's called Hanami. And I was trying to say, okay, so we went to a funeral for a Hanami, basically my sister-in-law's mother, my brother's wife's mother. And we use this word Hanami, which is an interesting, I was thinking about it, like, how do you describe that? Like, why am I up there? Well, it's a Hanami. In English, you can't say it's your in-laws. They're not in-laws. They're related to you because of marriage. But what's interesting is that the word itself exists in the vocabulary. Therefore, there's an importance ascribed to it, right? The relationships that are created between married couples and their families. That's the Hanami. The two families of two married of a couple who's married. So you've got your two families. There is a word that describes them. Okay, there is a relationship there. That's pretty cool too. Anyway, I took a quick jog up to San Francisco, and kind of rekindle some old friendships too. Big shout out to Joyce, a next stepper, and following this ministry for many years. It was great to catch up with her. Got a chance to meet with some people who had actually been listening to the Lenten journey this year. And you know, those of you who have been following last few weeks, I've been kind of surprised by the Lenten journey reaction, because we didn't produce one this year. And so early on, that first week or first 2 weeks, we had somebody who was posting, Ella, who was posting on our St. Peter page, the previous Lenten journeys, and people were reacting to them. They're going, hey, this is great and everything. It took me a few days or maybe a week or so until I realized that they were being posted. So all of a sudden, these productions from a few years ago had a new life. And here I was in San Francisco, somebody coming up to me and saying, oh, that was great. You know, I listened to it. One night I couldn't go to sleep, she said. So I put it on and I fell asleep. And I'm going, oh, is that supposed to be a compliment? But yes, it was. She told me because when I woke up, I was completely refreshed. Ah, that's a compliment, okay? She said that it was like I was renewed. It was my cares and my problems were put to one side. And this was her testimony. And this is like in the courtyard of the church in between the funeral service and the memorial gathering afterwards. Had a few minutes to talk. And so it was exciting just to be able to connect with people like that. The memorial service, the funeral itself, sad in the sense that a beautiful lady had passed away. In another way, it was a blessing because it comes to us in at a period of time that reminds us of resurrection. And so it's a bittersweet moment, you know, when you have funerals like this. Yes, there is the missing of a person. You miss that person. But on the other hand, there is the celebration and the excitement of knowing that, you know, your loved one is living, that life didn't end at the grave. And that comes to us because of our Christian faith, especially our Christian faith in the Easter message. And yes, I'll get to you. Yes, Ken just got back from Cuba. Yes, he got back. I'm leaving you for a really special party. He's like pointing to the Cuban CDs that he's... No, not Cuban cigars. He brings me Cuban CDs, musics that he's burnt from his travels through Cuba. Anyway, I'll share that with you in a few minutes. But let me get back to it. You know, it's exciting because Easter week is a very special week with a special message. As I shared with you, it said, Christos Hariavi Merelots. Christ has risen from the dead. Think about that for a moment. It is the original and first gospel message of the Christian church, right? The first message that comes to us from Christianity, right? The first message is not that Jesus was born. I mean, there was no excitement about him until after he was resurrected. After his resurrection, the early Christian community, if you look at the New Testament, that is the story of the early Christian community. And look at it scholastically, and you'll find that the community is developing and building around this common theme of resurrection. And if you've ever really wondered or thought about, did the resurrection happen? Is it possible? Can it happen? Many people have dissed it. And in fact, on my Sunday sermon, when you listen to it on the Periscope, I make a mention because it occurred to me, you're never going to prove the resurrection to certain people, and to certain other people, you're never going to disprove it. It's you either believe it or you don't. Like in other words, if you really believe in the resurrection, people could say that, hey, we discovered the bones of Jesus in Jerusalem. And even if you had proof positive that those were the bones, there's a group of people that would never believe that those are the bones because they believe in the resurrection. Likewise, there's people that you'll never convince that a human being can die and come back to life. And if that human being be God, how is that coming back to life? Is that God ever dead? And so you have some philosophical arguments there, right? And there's certain people that will just never believe it, no matter what. If you had a video camera, a closed circuit camera inside of the tomb, and you recorded Jesus laying down after this brutal killing and assassination up on a cross, taking his body down and putting it into him, you had a closed circuit camera and you saw Jesus coming back to life. Even if you had that proof, there'd be people that would say no. So it's a matter of faith. At some point, you have to take a big leap of faith. But it is not that big of a leap. Because when you read the New Testament, what you do see, beyond the faith, I'm not saying read it with faith, read it this time anthropologically, read it this time sociologically, read it this time as a history, you find that there's a community there that is going out on a limb because of this resurrection. There is a community there that is completely changed. Completely changed. Yes, Peter, who denied Jesus three times, is now willing to go out and be killed for the message of the resurrection. In fact, not only him, but every one of the disciples now become apostles. Every one of the apostles going out into different areas. If not killed, they're imprisoned. They're being put to death because they believe in something called the resurrection. Now, think about that for a moment, okay? There's certain things that you would lie about to get out of a mess, okay? And the classic stories come up like during wartime. And, you know, there's always, this is one of those ethical dilemmas that would come up, that would pop up in school. You're in a house and you have a Jew during Nazi Germany. You have a Jew hiding in your house. And the Nazis come to the door and said, "Are there any Jews in the house?" And you say, "No, there aren't." And they go by. Well, technically you've lied, but you've lied for the greater good, which is basically to save a life, right? Okay, so is it justified to lie at that point? There's cases of stealing. Les Miserables is built upon this justifiable theft, right? Jean Valjean needed to feed his sister's family, and he steals a piece of bread. Is it okay to steal? And so basically, you can make these cases for lying, for stealing, and of course, justifiable war for even killing, right? Now, you come to the point of the resurrection. Now, these disciples, now turned apostles, in other words, going out into the world and telling people that Jesus has risen, could have made it up. And you make up certain things in your life, but you don't die for those things unless you truly, 100%, completely believe it. And the most, look at the computer right in front of you, look at your dashboard if you're in a car, wherever it is, what color is it? Is it black? If somebody said to you it is white, you would argue with them. You'd say it's black. I know it's black. But if somebody puts a gun up to your head and says, "Tell me it's white," you say, "Okay, it's not worth dying for." Obviously, it's not worth dying for. I'm not going to, yes, it is white. I'm not going to get killed because you want to believe that my computer is white or my dashboard is white. Put a gun to my head, yes, I will change my mind. Now, these apostles had that option there. Tell us the resurrection didn't happen. Okay? Unless you're completely, totally believing in it, you don't follow through on a lie. Right? They completely believed it because they saw it. The resurrection jolted them, turned them around. It was the earthquake in their lives. And they absolutely, completely, 100% knew that Jesus, the same person who was up on the cross, who died up on the cross, the same person who was beaten in front of them, was put on a cross. They saw his blood spill. They saw him being put into a tomb. That same person came out of that tomb and he was resurrected. And when push came to shove, when they were said, "Okay, here's a gun on your head. There's a knife on your throat. There's a cross over there. We're going to nail you to it and do the same thing." These people had the option to say, "No, it's okay. It didn't really happen." But they don't. And you say, well, what about peer pressure, right? Some of them were alone. Yeah, peer pressure. In other words, like two of the disciples are together and they look at each other like, "Should we continue it?" And each of them gives enough encouragement to the other. But some of these guys were alone. They were alone. They were given the option to live, and instead of living, they said, I will not deny what I saw. I will not deny what I saw. Jesus Christ has risen from the grave. And so, like I said, forget about the faith issue. Approach it completely, logically. Look at the story. And these are people that could have said otherwise, but don't. They go to death defending what they saw. And that was the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so the Easter message comes to us 2,000 years later with us, looking at it and realizing that in our lives we have opportunities to plug into this Easter message. And when you realize that that plug-in is not about the end of life, but a plug-in throughout life, in other words, every moment, to be plugged into the resurrection. Well, guess what? Christ has resurrected. Christos Hariavi Merelots is not something you say for 40 days, but it becomes something you say not only 365 days, but it becomes a way of living, of understanding the power of God in you, outside of you, around you, everywhere. Conquering death. Conquering the ultimate. I'm going to be back. Let's do a song of the day today because I want so much to share with you. You guys are the best. Thank you for listening. We're going to do the song of the day and something special for you today. I'm going to play three versions of the same song. This is called Govia Yerusalem. It is the Easter anthem, so to speak, in Armenian Orthodoxy. Praise be to Jerusalem. From there, this is where Christ was revealed. Now, the first version you're going to hear is an electronic synthesized version. This was done, I want to say, about 25, maybe 30 years ago by Hachi Kazarian, fantastic musician, played on the Keftime albums with the clarinet, just an incredible musician that I personally followed when I was a young guy. Anyway, he did this this relatively unknown album of Armenian church songs that were done electronically on the early synthesizers, and you'll know what I mean when you hear it. This is Kovia Yerusalem. That's the first one you'll hear. The second one, Susanna, she actually plays at our church when our organist and our Lauren doesn't make it, needs to be out of town. Susanna, we have the opportunity to hear her live in our church. This is Susanna's playing Kovia Yerusalem on the organ, and the third one will be the Vazgenyan seminarians singing it. So you get the, and there are so many versions of it. Kovia Yerusalem, my personal favorite, of course, the Vazgenyan seminarians from Lake Sevan. So three different versions. I'll just run them back to back, okay? Enjoy. three different versions for you. There you go. Electronic, Hachi Kazarian. On the Organ, that's Susanna Sarkisian. And finally, the Vazgenyan Seminarians singing it. Praise be to Jerusalem. Govya Yerusalem.
No brag.
Hariav Christos. Respect. Christ has risen, the ultimate message of Easter time. Wanted to share that little special treat for you Next Step listeners. As you know, it's my favorite. It's my favorite proclamation that I wish we could just and make it into an anthem that could be played throughout the year. If I had a choice, that's what it would be, right? The anthem of the church. Because to me, that Jerusalem is that holy land, which is our lives, which is that holy land, which is every sacred spot on this earth. Christ has conquered
no
death.
Brag.
A new fact. Jerusalem, a new life begins for all of us. Kovia Yerusalem. There was links on our show notes today. Do check them out, all pointing to each of the three versions that you heard. Okay, I'm going to share with you some stories from Holy Week. Sometimes it's like bizarre. You know how we left last week? We were in between Holy Thursday. I had done the Divine Liturgy in the morning, and then in the evening we had the washing of the feet service. So I hit you last Thursday. So all of, you could think of this like in Lost in Space, you know, where it goes, last time, as you recall, we left Will Robinson and the robot at this place. Well, last time, as you recall, Father Vosken was in the middle of Holy Week. Well, that evening, a real cool miracle happened. And also, we had the ever-present hoopla. Yes, hoopla to the max. Now, you haven't experienced Armenian Church hoopla until you've lived in Glendale. This is a true story. Okay, on the night of the Passion, namely Holy Thursday. True story. People actually come to church, not for the services, not to worship, but for the hoopla, for the extras. Because there's like little string that we pass out, and the string is meant to be tied in little knots. So they come to church. Do you have string? Serious. I'm serious about this. I mean, you wouldn't believe this if this didn't happen to me. In fact, I was really glad we were closing up church Thursday night. It was 11 o'clock. My wife was right next to me. She saw it. Because sometimes when I tell her, I think like, okay, she must just think I'm off the loony bin or anything. But 11 o'clock, we're closing up the church after this most beautiful, beautiful service, Armenian Orthodox service of the Passion, where we recreate, where we read the Gospels, the narratives. I mean, spiritually, it takes you to a different plane, into a different world. And then all you need is one of these hoopla, these hoopla experiences to kind of like slap you back into reality. And it happened. There was 11 o'clock. Getting ready to close up the church and leave. There was maybe about three or four of us left. And sure enough, two women come into church. Do you have any butter? Now, this is, yeah, you got to know some of the circumstances, of course. You go, what are people coming to church looking for butter? Yeah, that's the question. What do they come into church looking for butter? Well, what we do is during the feet washing, we anoint the feet also with holy oil. And this has, through the centuries, evolved into nice little cubes of butter that are brought into the church too. It sounds bizarre. People now come to get the butter. Just like on Osvaldzadzin, on Assumption, they come to get grapes. The hoopla. It's more important than the message. And there it was. It was happening right in front of my eyes. 11 o'clock at night. People, can you imagine? You've left your family. I think I'll go to the church and get some butter. Well, there's the grocery stores down the street. If the grocery store is closed, you know, there's a convenience store. It's called the 7-Eleven. go there and pick up some butter? No, I think I'll go to the church and get some butter. Anyway, bizarre, hoopla. Completely missing the point of what it was about. Completely missing the passion narratives. During the services, you know, there's people who just, this is what it's for, what it's about for them. The hoopla. They want the little products. And I kept referring back to that passage. I believe it's in John chapter 5, where people are following Jesus and they're coming for the miracles. And he says, you're coming for the miracles. You're not coming here because the Son of God is in your presence. You're coming here because of the miracles. You want the hoopla, basically. And he doesn't refuse it, by the way. He gives the hoopla. Okay, now let's come back. What was the miracle? Because we've got to balance this off, okay? It wasn't just a week of hoopla. I'm sorry, it just sounds funny. It wasn't a week of hoopla medicine, hoopla magic, hoopla religion. It was some very, 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 very deep moments. And one of them happened that Thursday evening. So I was in front of the congregation because, true to form, I know what they're going to go, you know, being in Glendale, like I said, you haven't experienced Holy Week till you've experienced it in Jerusalem, in Armenia, and in Glendale. Luckily, I've seen two out of the three. I've seen Armenia and experienced, lived, and been at for the last 13 years in Glendale. And it is basically a push and shove match. So here we are on Holy Thursday. Washing the feet of the disciples comes to us from John chapter 13. And I got in front of the congregation before I got vested. And I said, let me go through some of the ground rules. It's basically understanding that this is a sacred time, a sacred space. It's not about the cutesy thing of getting your feet washed, but the idea of being with Christ during this journey. And I stood up, and as I was talking, through the corner of my eye, I was catching that there was this young man there. And I had seen him on Palm Sunday. He had come to church, but I didn't have a chance to talk with him or his mother just because of the massive number of people. But it was very clear and obvious that he had some physical and emotional challenges in his life. It was, I would go out on a limb to say he was severely autistic. He was with his mother. And though I did notice that as I went through the procession and extended the cross, he was also very reverent. It took him a while to figure out what was going on, but when he saw the cross, he focused in on the cross. And paid his respect to the cross. It was an interesting combination of elements. Anyway, this is on Palm Sunday. Now here we are 4 days later on Holy Thursday. And as I'm addressing the congregation about some basic ideas and the idea of Peter wanting his entire body washed, through the corner of my eye, I noticed that he's on the side with his mother. This gentleman is right there. And his physical condition, his emotional condition, I don't know what it was, but he's starting to get jittery as I'm talking. And all of a sudden, as I'm talking, he stands up from his seat. And I continued because I'm not sure what's going on. And as I'm talking, I'm coming to the portion of saying that, you know, we have to be respectful of this very special time that we're at. He just gets out of his seat in the pews, makes his way down, and he comes over and he hugs me. And he hugs me and doesn't let go. It's one of those moments. It's one of those miracle moments. Now, that day we were running a camera from the altar. I do have that little segment. It's on YouTube. Be happy to share the link with you if you're interested in watching or if it's enough that you're hearing this story, okay? It's on the show notes today. But we stood there for a few seconds, and, you know, of course, the entire congregation was kind of like in shock with the usual, oh, you know, the awes were there present too. And then he went back to his seat, and it occurred to me that, yes, not only my feet, but wash my entire body. I want to be part of this. And, you know, it's those little moments to me that are the big miracles that are worked in that church. Because in the presence of everyone, we all of a sudden saw, and it all of a sudden hit us, that, you know, there is a mysticism that is well and alive. You can't explain everything by logic or by following out the rules, but you have to submit to the flow. There is a flow of events that are taking place. And we're in the middle of Holy Week. And the message is, come to me, all of you, and come to me completely. And here was a young man, the autistic boy, who was showing the way, who came and gave of himself. And then he went back and he sat down. Now, later on, somebody said that autistic people are very attuned to emotional distress in others, and suggesting that possibly he was attuned to something that was going on in me, being a very difficult and emotionally charged week for the priest, and especially for what we were going through this past week. It might have been that he was actually giving me comfort, in which case, yes, even more, there's a bigger miracle there, right? People that we tend to look on and say, what are the, you know, how could they possibly give us something? Here was a young man who was giving me so much more than I could, than I deserved, and so much more than I could really handle at that moment. Anyway, you can check that out. To me, that was one of the big miracles of that week. Now, we had some continuing miracles that were taking place, namely the following day, when we also had the service over the grave of Christ. We construct an actual grave, and we take a moment to go underneath it. And, you know, to be honest, that evening I wasn't planning on giving a sermon, but I saw the people, and there, you know, I've shared with you, my next step, listeners, the Eleanor Rigby line that always occurs to me. Father McKenzie wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave, no one was saved. And it just kind of like hit me that, you know, we can't come and commemorate Christ in the grave without a comment on it. And I shared this idea that I've shared with you in the past, Next Step listeners, the idea of going into the grave, because the passage that we read comes to us from the Epistle of Peter, the letter of Peter, chapter 3, verses 17 and following, in which he talks about Jesus, after he was put into the tomb, spoke to the prisoners. And that has evolved into a larger theology of Jesus going down into hell. And I've shared that with you, that this is kind of an absurd kind of idea if we think of it in the traditional sense, because if you are a soul that is in the middle of hell and you're complaining like, oh man, I've got to spend eternity in this horrible place called hell, and Jesus comes down and preaches to you, is there any doubt that you won't go with him? Obviously, we could say with 100% accuracy that basically hell was cleared out that day, if he did go down into the traditional idea of what we have as an afterlife hell, right? Anybody suffering in hell would have obviously latched on to Jesus at that moment. Now, this is a theology that has been built and everything, and we can look at it in terms of hell being a separate place, or we can think of the own hells, our private hells that we have in our lives. And it occurred to me that, yes, this is what really the meaning of these services have to be. It's not for us to be judgmental over anyone else except ourselves, to look at our lives and realize that we do have those personal hells and spaces from which we look to be delivered. And by allowing Christ to go into those hells, to be able to preach the love, to be able to preach the message of hope. It requires us to get out of the hells that we have by forgiving others, by loving others, caring for others. And so we invite people to come and walk underneath the tomb, underneath the grave of Christ. We've constructed a small little table with flowers, and we invite people to walk underneath it, and in so doing, to leave their cares, because really, nobody else can do that for you. You need to be able to dump the baggage that you have. Nobody else can dump your baggage for you. And the grave is the perfect place, because it's left there. It's a negative reality. It's a negative space. It's a grave, right? Life does not exist in the grave. It lives outside of the grave. The grave is not the end. It is a passageway. So dump what you can at that point. And that was the message that I shared that evening. Now, Sunday morning, we had, of course, the Divine Liturgy, and we celebrated with the message that Christ has been resurrected. Now, the excitement of that is translated via the service into the Divine Liturgy. Namely, that after Christ resurrected, he did set up his church. And the church was commissioned to celebrate and do the work that Christ started here in this world. So I invite you to take a look at the Sunday morning Divine Liturgy. It's up on YouTube. There'll be a link on today's show notes too. But see the energy level. Yes, the quality of it is, I'm not really pleased with it, but we were able to work a little bit on the audio portion, and it is all up there. Got a lot of stuff up there, and I hope you're making use of it. But most importantly, we appreciate you sharing it. And when I come back after Susie's announcement, I'm going to be sharing with you some sharing stuff, okay? Some exciting things, including that little segment I told you. Yes, Ken got back from Cuba, so I want to save a little bit of time and share with you some Cuban news as well. Anyway, here is Susie to share with you how you can get involved, how you can share with us, okay? Yeah, nice way to say it.
This is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie. And I want to do a little shout out, a guy that goes unnoticed, Ken. He just got back from Cuba. He was visiting there, yes, on his spring break. Had an opportunity and brought me back some great music from there, too. But also shared with us some of the oldness that's probably going to be going away in the next few years, you know, as it becomes more and more westernized. But of course, the classic cars. And it got me thinking about, like, you know, the other day we just packed up and went to San Francisco. How much life has changed in the last 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, even 10 years. 10 years ago, you didn't have a smartphone, did you? There was no such thing. I think the iPhone came out in 2007, right? Look how much life has changed. Now, can you think of somebody around you, you know, who doesn't have a smartphone? It's like a way of life. It's just the way things are done. And so, too, I thought the other day, you know, we had to get up and go to a funeral up in San Francisco. Do you know that? I remember as a kid, we lived in Hollywood. Pasadena was maybe about a 15-minute. It is a 15-minute trip without without traffic. But when I was a kid, I remember my dad, my grandpa, it was a major trip from Hollywood to, we'd go to Pasadena. It was like, did you check the oil in your car? Coolant, tires, you know, we're going to go. And you would talk about it. Next Sunday, we're going to be going to Pasadena. We're going to Pasadena. Like, it's a big deal thing. Now, when I look at it, geez, it's literally a few miles on this freeway. But it was a big deal. And growing up, I remember, you know, before cars became so automated and robotic, we used to work on our own cars. And yeah, I do remember the VWs that we had blowing out. My wife won't let me forget blowing out the rods and everything on those things. But we took take care of them. If we'd have to drive for a few hours, definitely it was a major event. A two-hour drive, three-hour drive, which was usually the fare from Los Angeles to Fresno, a local Armenian stop, a capital of Armenian life, Fresno. You know, it's maybe 4 hours by car. Yeah, you'd have to prepare. And here we were going to San Francisco for a funeral. Basically, you got a funeral tomorrow. Okay, let's get in the car and let's just drive. All you really need to worry about is, do you have enough gas? Yeah. It's automated. It's automated where you really don't think too much. You kind of just like get in there and you take it for granted, these long distances. It's a 400-mile trip. You're just going to be sitting in the car. You get in there and you turn on the key. And along the way, you make sure that you got gas. Make sure your tummy's full. You got coffee to keep your eyes open. And you're there all of a sudden. Is taking it for granted. And when I saw pictures Ken showed me of Cuba and I saw those cars, it just reminded me back, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And I know those cars are probably even older than that, you know. The maintenance, the preparation that you had to do to just move. Now, we are definitely in a different time. And for us to adapt to those times, it means that we have to be attuned to those times. We have to acknowledge them. We cannot say that they don't exist. And all too often what we have is that kind of ostrich mentality that if we look the other way or we stick our heads in the sand, it doesn't exist. And you laugh at this, but in so much of our lives, we do this. If we look the other way, if we don't acknowledge it, it might just even go away, might not even exist. And so too with matters of faith. So too with the Armenian Church. It'll just happen. Somebody will keep it open. And basically, our Armenian Church is beyond that keeping it open stage. Yeah, they're open. You'll find beautiful Armenian churches. You'll find communities. You'll find people who are donating to build these churches. But at what point do people say that the content is important? We have to supply that content. That content is a big one. It's not one that gets donations quickly, but it's that content that we need to really give our energy to. And that's what you do when you support the next step. It's about content. It's not about big structures. It's about understanding that there is something that we cannot take for granted. The beauty of the ancient Orthodox tradition is the beauty of Christ himself. It's not about a church that's apart from Christ. It is Christ's body here in this world, functioning and doing the work. So when you're supporting Christ's body, you've got to realize that you're doing the essence of what the faith is all about. Now, if you suffer from insomnia, as some of us do, I would suggest that you watch some of these evangelists in the middle of the night. There is a show called Camp Meeting. You wouldn't think it's an evangel. These people actually propose that you give $1,000 and God will multiply that $1,000. Not only do they propose it, they have witnesses who get up and say, hey, I gave $1,000. And before I left that church, somebody came up and walked up to me and said, God told me to give you this. I opened up the envelope and what? Lo and behold, there was $1,000 in it. I'm serious. Yeah, I'm serious. You know, I was just thinking, I just like cut down my poor people for wanting butter in the middle of the night. Is this any more absurd? Is this any more absurd? And yet, there are thousands of people that subscribe to these kind of philosophies. Why? Because there's a kickback in it for them, right? There's a kickback. If you give 1,000, you can get 2,000 in return. Well, my friends, you know what that is? That is called gambling. Las Vegas does a good job of it, but the church shouldn't be doing a job of that. And so we ask very humbly, if you find value in these shows, do support them. That's all it's about, okay? There was some more I wanted to talk about. I've got a whole list of stuff we were going to talk, but let's just kind of end it today. We'll call this the post-Easter show, okay? We kind of like had to tie up some loose ends from the Easter season. Next week when we get back, there's quite a bit. If you follow religious life and religious news in the world, you'll find that there is so much that we need to be commenting on. Last night we had a really good meeting. Susie was over and we looked over the website. We're going to be starting our active blogging and getting a lot of different ways of communicating. So do check us out at inhisshoes.org, epostle.net, all the usual spots on Facebook and so on. And you're going to find that a lot of great stuff is going on. Also, do check out today's show notes. You'll have a list of links where you could check in with all the stuff that we've been doing. I want to thank you for joining us. Hope you enjoyed today's brief show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of our producer, Susie, and our engineer, Ken, fresh from Cuba, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your podcast out.